It's a wet and windy Sunday evening, but we still have a story for you. Tonight we have an extract from Ron Askew's book, In the Room with Three Doors. The book is currently available on Amazon, and you can find the link in our description or social media pages. Ron is interested in some feedback for this piece, so if you do have anything you would like to share, please contact us at sundaynightstories@hotmail.com. So, here's In the Room with Three Doors, written and narrated by Ron Askew.
In the Room with Three Doors by R.J. Askew. Chapter 1. Just 25. It's midnight on Blackfriars Bridge, where the three of them are standing halfway across. Rhee has her back to the parapet. Behind and beneath her, London's late-night lights dance on the blood-dark Thames as it ebbs through the ventricles of the venerable Victorian bridge. "Look at it," she says. "What?" says Matt. "It! Everything! Too much!" she snaps, her racing green eyes aflash with passionate urgency. "Oh, for God's sake, Rhee!" "Look at him!" she hisses. A distracted teen passes, tap-tap-tapping his phone, miming obscenities. "Oh, come on, Rhee," says Jamie. "Look at her," she says. A cougar in white faux fur walks slowly towards the south bank, Instagramming Moscow. Man in taxi raises phone to ear. Girl on bus takes selfie of self pouting. "I've decided," says Rhee. "What, Rhee? What have you decided?" asks Jamie, one of the two tall young guys standing with her, his arm in a creamy white sling. She jabs a finger at him. "What happened to you was the tipping point." "Oh, it could have happened to anyone," he says. "Yeah, but it happened to you." "Yeah, so, big boy, I'll live." Matt arrows a "No, mate," glance at Jamie, who winces as the crassness of his words hits home. "Oh, God, Rhee, look, I'm sorry, I... Matt's phone warbles. Jake's waiting in the rising sun. "Let him wait," says Rhee. "Oh, come on, Rhee, don't be like that." She waves an open palm at Jamie. "Look at the state of him." "All I've got's a bruised collarbone, for God's sake," he protests. "You could have been killed." "Rhee, I'm all right. I'll be fine." "You could have been killed," she insists. "But I wasn't, was I?" "She does have a point, buddy boy," says Matt. "I mean, trying to catch a falling suitcase on a tube escalator, not good, man. Especially not a hard shell case doing snowboarding tricks at head height." "Exactly," says Rhee. "Talk about stupid. Guys, 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 there was a woman with a pram in front of me. What was I supposed to do? Duck and let the case crush her baby?" "We just don't want you getting hurt, okay?" says Rhee. "Okay, okay," Jamie's hand slaps the parapet. "I'm sorry about Caris, Rhee, okay? I really am. You do know that, don't you?" "Yeah, yeah, I know it, Jamie. I know you are. You don't sound it," mutters Jamie. Matt throws his arms out.
"Jamie, for God's sake."
"No, Matt, let him," says Rhee, bossing Jamie's ice-blue eyes, her voice a slowly, softly drawn blade. "Like, what was that supposed to mean, Jamie?"
"Look, I'm sorry, Rhee. Just ignore me, I'm saying all the wrong shit. I've just lost it, okay?"
Rhee looks out over London's all-seeing river. "You weren't to know that ghost bike would be there."
"Yeah, but I should have known," says Jamie. "Like, they're all over London, right? I mean, who puts them there anyway? Bit ghoulish if you ask me."
"It's okay," says Rhee. "None of it matters. I've decided."
"Decided what?"
"Give me your phone."
"Why?"
"Just give it me, will you?"
"No, I won't. Hey, Rhee, get off of me."
"Give it to me." She prizes the phone from Jamie's grasp and brandishes it in his face. "Our old lives are over, see? We're leaving. Give me my phone back. I told you, our old lives are over. We're 25, the three of us. Make your mind up, time. It has to be this way. I've made the decision for all of us. Our old lives end here. We are going to start living in a new way. Tonight. Right here, right now."
"Rhee, listen to me," says Matt.
"Your sister's not with us anymore. Caris is lost to us all, but we are still very much alive, okay?"
"Rhee? Rhee?" Listen, you could have been killed. I love you, Jamie. Why can't you just get it? She looks up into his eyes, her fists clenched, knuckles white, her tiger heart swollen with passion. You could have been killed. The words are out. She said it. I love you, Jamie. All three are shocked to their collective core. What? She tries to pretend nothing's happened. Come on, Matt, give it to me. What, Ree? Your phone. What for, Ree? Give it to me. They grapple. Okay. I've no choice, right? No choice. He plays her game. It's her winning tomboy sheerness. He can't resist. A passing beggar thinks of pitching them, sees his invisible, limps on. Your heart and soul into being an insurance loss adjuster, Matt, Ree demands. You know it's not, he says. She turns to Jamie, a phone clutched in either hand beneath her chin. You, Mr. Big Shot journalist, not. Ree, it's a job, for God's sake. You're a 25-year-old unpaid intern, Jamie. NJ News is like a massive company, Ree. Naphtha prices, Jamie. You're reporting on naphtha prices. I'm just getting started, okay? Oh, get real, Jamie. That's so not fair, Ree. I had like 6 killer interviews to get that job. Yeah, give him a break, Ree. No, Matt. Oh, nice, says Jamie. Not, adds Matt. Ree waves a phone-clutching fist over her right shoulder, downriver, towards where Jamie slaves at the towers of Canary Wharf for less pay than the most exploited 19th-century docker. Is that what you got a first in nanotech whatever from Cambridge for, Jamie, and a shedload of debt to be an unpaid intern checking out naphtha prices for some vampire factory? Is it? Jamie gazes at the pavement. You were going to be a doctor once, as I recall. Look at me, Jamie. We're 25, the three of us. What's, like, really, really important? Getting on's important, says Matt. Oh, shut it, Matt, snaps Ree. Jamie shuffles from foot to foot, shaking his head as he looks into the goth black night, mouth all rucked up, eyes locked on a plane's shifting lights. Truth, Jamie, she insists. Truth. No reconciliation. Leave it alone, Ree, says Matt. What's got into you anyway? You say you love him in one breath. Next breath, you're ripping his lungs out. Jamie looks from Ree to Matt. Truth dawning. She's right, mate. More than she knows. They've got us by the balls. I'm a 25-year-old teen. No, you're not, says Matt. Yes, I am. I've done nothing with my life. Ree's right. 75 years of life between the three of us. And what have any of us done? Tell you, mate, I was like some cornered animal in those interviews. Cunning was all that counted in the end. All the cutesy cute personal statement stuff meant nothing. Came down to body language. Literally. It was so humiliating. I could see one of the HR trolls. Razia was her name. She fancied me. So what did I do? I let her eye fuck me, didn't I? That's what I did. Everyone in the room knew what was going on. She says I'm like the guy in the red chair in Mr. Brightside. She gets the whole class to YouTube it. The guy in the red chair's not even blonde. I tell you, I felt so sick. But I still did it, didn't I? Razia seems to get off that she could do it, that she was the one with the paid job, the insider, that she had this power over us. It was like sick how she got off strutting her stuff in front of the other women. I could tell that they hated her and they hated me worse for being her sick little gimpy boy. Went on for days. He glares at the distant lights of Canary Wharf. My heart's just not in that place. The way it eats people. His eyes gleam with passion. All of it. The way they build us up through their big shiny success machine, then break us down, rivet by rivet. That look in my parents' eyes when they tell me, don't worry about the debt, Jamie. Listening to them talking about me in the kitchen. Jamie this, Jamie that. Not knowing where I'm going. The what the fuck of it all. Then I think about guys like us back in the day. He looks straight into Matt's eyes. She's right, mate. I do need to grow up and grow some balls, big time. Think you could have done it? Done what? Asks Matt. Jumped up out of your trench, blowing that whistle. What? Got mown down? Led real men. What? Death and glory? Jamie shakes his head, distressed. Oh, for Christ's sake, just ignore me. I'm talking crap. One of the phones rings, drawing urgent looks of silent panic from their owners, and jolting Ree out of her stunned immersion in the flash whirlpool of Jamie's confessional. On the third ring, Ree hurls the phone over the bridge parapet, up into the unresisting night sky. Matt's jaw drops as he realizes that the phone is his. His eyes flash, fear, panic, loathing, as he watches it plunge towards the river, ringing once more before it vanishes into the silencing waters of the Thames and dies. She throws the second phone after the first. Its silvery form arcs, twisting through the void. Down, down, down. Smack! Onto the captain's cabin of a Thames clipper boat bound for Greenwich, which shoots from under the bridge with fatefully exquisite timing. The phone disintegrates in an explosion of shattered bits and bytes, cracking the vessel's windscreen, though this cannot be seen from the bridge above. The noise of the impact could be mistaken for a pistol shot, compounded by a strange echo, as if within the very soul of the bridge. "Oh shit, Ree, what the hell have you done?" says Jamie, untangling his arm from his sling. "Set us free," she snaps, throwing her own phone up into the night sky with a shout of, "Enough!" A small crowd of the curious crane necks to watch the third phone spin through the air and splash sacrificially into the ink-black waters, swirling in time out of mind below them. Someone cheers, ironically. Someone claps. Once, twice, life moves on. But the Thames clipper slows midstream, while somewhere south of the river a siren begins its unrelenting woo 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 as Armed Response Unit PZ-19 speeds to a red 3 on Blackfriars Bridge. "Run," shouts Matt. "Run, Ree, run! Come on, we've got to leg it!"